The average American throws away over 1,130 pounds of waste each year. On this week's Please Explain, we continue our series, How to Save the World, by looking at how we can dispose of garbage, how recycling and composting and smaller packaging can cut down on the amount of garbage people throw away around the world, and at some of the ways garbage can be used as a renewable energy source. Joining us are Nicholas J. Themelis, Director of the Earth Engineering Center and professor in the School of Engineering at Columbia University, and Elizabeth Reut, author of Garbage Land, published by Back Bay Books, and Bottle Mania, published by Bloomsbury. Welcome to our show. We also invite questions from our listeners during these segments, and you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or call us at 212-433-9692. Elizabeth, let's begin with you. The first thing that comes to mind and at the mention of the word garbage is household waste, things like kitchen scraps, newspapers, packaging. How much does that contribute to the total amount of waste?
Do you mean the total amount of municipal solid waste that is going off to landfills or incinerators?
Or whatever. I mean, how much of it is the stuff that I am throwing away as opposed to all the other stuff that winds up having to be dealt with?
This is a great and fundamental question. You're talking about municipal solid waste, stuff that individuals, residents make of cities, and it's a minuscule fraction of the overall waste generated in this country. Most waste is manufacturing waste and agricultural waste and stuff that we never even see. So while it looks like vast tonnages are being moved away from our curbs, and they are, it is a pretty small proportion, maybe only 2 or 3% of the entire U.S. waste stream.
And you mentioned landfills. Is that where most of the stuff ends up after it's been picked up by the garbage truck?
In this country, yes. More of it goes to landfills than incinerators.
So, Nicholas, how is industrial waste disposed of?
Well, the big companies have their own processes for reusing their own waste. I mean, the problem is with small companies, like say somebody's using rubber to make gaskets for cars, and they have leftover pieces. It's very difficult for them to reuse them. So what they do, I guess, they send them, not I guess, they end up in landfills.
Well, what about, are they ever shipped to other countries?
There may be a situation where, you know, such things are shipped, but it would be, I have people who have called me and say, I have two truckloads, for instance, of remnants, you know, what can I do? There's nothing I can tell them what to do. We have no way. Now, if they find a way that somebody in China gets them and then burns them or whatever they do there, then it can happen. But it's the exception rather than the rule.
Now, another growing concern is electronic waste, isn't it? With so many new products, electronic waste must be growing by the minute. Doesn't it require special kinds of disposal?
Well, the major form of disposal here in the U.S., in North America, go back to smelters, copper smelters. Smelters that smelt concentrates, copper concentrates, and also scrap. And the electronic scrap goes there, so you get the metal content, some of the metal content, not aluminum, but you get, let's say, copper, all the precious metals, they are recycled. Others are sent to China. There's no plant, let's say, which is right now I can mention that is taking electronic waste and breaking it up. They break it up to pieces, and then they would send some of the pieces to China, for instance.
Now, Elizabeth, what happens when it winds up in China? Are they using it to make our latest smartphones?
No, they cannot be done. All they do, they break it up to the materials as much as they can, or they may burn them sometimes in makeshift furnaces to get the metals out.
Elizabeth, go ahead.
Refurbishing going on as well. It depends where the computers are going and in what shape they are when they're sent overseas, but there are a lot of people who are employed upgrading and refurbishing computers for a second useful life.
Now, don't some states like Maine require manufacturers to pay for the disposal of electronic waste?
Yeah, there's a real patchwork across the country of different laws in different states, and New York City has a law also to keep electronic waste out of landfills, and there's different mechanisms for paying for it. Sometimes the municipalities are paying for it, and sometimes the manufacturers are required to pay proportionally to how much of their brand is sold in the state, or there could be an advance fee that the consumer pays when they purchase the electronics. I think that's the way California's system works.
Well, in New York City, sometimes I'll see a notice about a collection of electronic waste, but it's usually at an inconvenient place at a specific time, and I'm never sure when I can bring that thing that's sitting in my basement to somebody who actually could do something with it.
Not that hard to find out, Leonard. And it's actually getting easier. There are more and more of these drop-off events around the city, and anyone who's listening, they can go to the Lower East Side Ecology Center's website and find out when the next e-waste collection is. And they're establishing sort of permanent sites now. There's one in Brooklyn. It's convenient to me, probably not to you, but there are going to be more.
Well, I'm
and
in
more
Brooklyn. Where is it?
It's somewhere in the Gowanus area. It's on President Street.
Okay. It's actually fairly convenient to me, but
okay.
In the light of the current political debate, is it likely that we will ever develop a national policy on this?
People are hoping that manufacturers certainly are hoping for this and are paying for it because it would be a lot easier for them to know what the rules are and have a consistent policy. I think that it's likely that we're going to get to that point.
Well, how does the EU handle electronic waste?
Nicholas,
do you know?
Yeah.
There are several organizations who are promoting electronic waste. I should say a small fraction of that is actually recycled. It's not as easy as all that. You know, there are programs that they should be encouraged, but to a large extent, electronic waste in Europe, they end up in where, if we talk about Northern Europe, where the municipal waste ends up, and this is waste to energy plants. So at least there you may recover some of the metals, you know, the iron and some of the aluminum and so on, and the heat value of the... But this is a small part of the municipal waste stream, Leonardo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small part.
And in looking at the future of dealing with garbage, aren't there really two goals, to cut down on the amount of waste that we produce and to use waste as an energy source? How can we cut down on the amount of waste that we produce?
Well, that's a hard question because this is part of the culture. We use, in the U.S., we use twice as much, or we generate twice as much waste per person as in Japan, as in Holland, several equally developed countries. As we are, they have just as good living, but they have much less waste.
How do they do that?
Well, the same goes with electricity. Why do we use twice as much electricity per capita than the Japanese or the Europeans?
We have bigger homes, bigger incomes, more disposable income, bigger cars. It's easier to...
The culture,
it is,
you know.
Cultural, yes.
And in Germany, they don't just have two recycling bins. They have three or four. So they got a lot more... sophisticated in their approach to recycling, aren't they?
Well, let me say something about this because, for instance, in Japan, they started with, seven or eight bins, but it was not proven practical. Right now, we just made a study last year for Recycle America, which is one of the biggest recyclers in North America. And the question there was, what is better, the dual stream which of recycling, what New York City is doing now,
mm-hmm. you know. Where we mix metals and glass and plastic and a whole bunch of other things together.
Yeah, that's one stream, and then the paper is the second stream. And versus single stream, where all the recyclables go together. And we worked on this. Two of my graduate students worked for a long time. We examined data, and the answer was that the single stream is better because people recycle more. You know, if the less choice that people have to make or the less bins they have to, they are bound to put more to the recyclable stream, 50% more, actually. And then, of course, this material goes to plants where they are properly equipped to separate the paper from the glass and the plastic and the metal. So to answer your question, it's not necessary to have many bins, as long as people recycle the recyclables.
Elizabeth, you wanted to add to that.
I just wanted to say that doesn't it cost the the recyclers more to separate all this stuff that has been put together. It costs them more to pull it all apart into these separate streams that processors or markets can then use. And doesn't it also degrade? This is, I mean, I've heard arguments on both sides. It might be easier for consumers who are discarding this stuff, but it's lower quality material for the people who will actually want it in the end.
Nicholas?
No, it does so, because the reason Recycle America wanted this study was to know what it is the best from a carbon footprint point of view. But, of course, they already knew the economics. The economics are that the single stream is less costly because you don't have as many trucks moving and the trucks can be fuller and so on. Now, it is true that the quality goes a bit down, slightly. Let me tell you how. In the dual stream, which New York City is doing, the residue is about 5%. In the single stream is 10%, but the amount that's collected is much bigger. So overall, you end up with 40% more recycling, actual recycling in a community. And that, of course, has a tremendous environmental beneficial impact.
Now, we have a message, a comment from John in Clinton Hill, who says, why is it that my Canadian friends tell me that they typically put out one small bag of garbage per week? They seem to have a much better system of recycling, composting, and have mentioned the fact that they have legislation regarding uniform plastic types. None of this type 1 through 7 plastic stuff.
Mm-hmm. He might live in Toronto, which has an excellent composting system, which will take a huge chunk out of what you put on the curb to go off to a landfill or incinerator.
Now, Elizabeth, you wrote in your blog that according to the EPA, packaging and containers have increased by nearly 14 million tons between 1990 and 2007. Things come in boxes within boxes, shrink-wrapped in plastic, filled with styrofoam. Why is there so much packaging? Does it have to be that styrofoam? I'm never sure whether styrofoam or bubble wrap is recyclable. I don't know whether I should put it in with the rest of the garbage or whether I should stick it in with the plastics.
You can't recycle it here in New York. although I suppose you could pop the bubbles and bring it to a place that does accept plastic bags for recycling, but that's not a curbside program.
We'd have to pop all the bubbles.
That's fun doing that. Or you could reuse that material. I mean, that is the best thing.
Yeah, well, that's
that
what I do sometimes anyway. I have a lot of bubble wrap around my office. People are wondering whether I'm in the bubble wrap collection business.
But, yes, things are shipped long distances. People use packaging for a lot of reasons, to protect the goods. A lot of packaging is used by brand owners. It's an advertising space. If they have to impart information to us, they need room to print this stuff. Food is wrapped up because, I mean, Fresh Direct, people complain about the amount of packaging around that food, but you're paying all this money for food and they don't want to scratch on their zucchini, and so it comes wrapped up.
Well, is there a better way to wrap these things? In some cases, some boxes come just with cardboard protecting the item. Others have these very fancily shaped styrofoam things that lock the thing into a box.
Well, it's a matter of economics. The styrofoam, you're right, it's a different material, but it has a very low density, so it costs less for the people who send it. Let me ask you this.
You mean because it's lighter?
It's lighter. I have tried to answer this question myself because, you know, we like to drink wine, and I used to go to the neighborhood store around and pick up a few bottles, and then I found, or people found me to send me fantastic kind of selections, so 12 bottles, you know, easy, but the same price as I would pay, and they send them in very special packaging. So I'm contributing to this. And also, if you think about how the internet shopping has increased with time, you know, how many times you go to the internet, and of course, any time you go to the internet, you're going to use more packaging than if you went to a store.
Local store, right. Or bought it directly from the farmer or the person who made it, or that kind of thing.
My guests are Elizabeth Wright, author of Garbage Land and Bottle Mania, and Nicholas J. Themelis, who's director of Earth Engineering Center and a professor in the School of Engineering at Columbia University. We are talking about saving the world, in this case, from all the garbage that we create on today's Please Explain segment. And I'm Leonard Lopez. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Caleb left this question for you, Elizabeth. By the way, you can leave a question on our show page or also call us at 212-433-9692. Caleb says, my impression from reading Garbage Land is that consumer recycling is mostly a placebo. That is, compared to construction, corporate waste, individual garbage is a drop in the bucket. Is that a fair takeaway?
I think some of our curbside recycling is more important than other parts of it. I did spend a lot of time asking whether it was worthwhile and doing any good, considering those fractions that I mentioned before, the amount of manufacturing waste and industrial waste versus our personal waste. But the answer was firmly yes. That recycling paper and metal, which have high value, are really important to save landfill space and to avoid extracting raw materials from the earth to make new stuff. I really do think it's important, and we should continue doing it.
And we did it during World War II because there was a drive to have tin and aluminum, which were harder to get in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was considered valuable then, why do some people say we actually lose money on recycling today?
I don't think that we're losing. Most recyclables, I think glass is the exclusion, have pretty high prices right now, and it's going to become more expensive to extract raw materials from the earth as energy and water become more expensive, and as we take into account all these externalities, the pollution that we generate, the water pollution and air pollution, and all the energy it takes to mine materials and transform them into consumer goods. So even if these materials are abundant, they probably will be costing us more to be getting at them.
But Mayor Bloomberg resisted reinstating recycling for a while. He said it was not effective cost-wise. Have things changed over the years he's been mayor?
If I may interject here, you know, at the time he did it, he was right. Because yeah. I had one of my students followed up the streams, the recyclable streams. We're talking about 2001. Mm-hmm. And she followed the recyclable streams at that time, and she found that metals and paper, 85% was actually recycled. The residue was 15% about. And then with plastics and with glass, it was the other way around. 85% at that time was residue. So you had these separate trucks collecting this stuff and so bringing it to MRFs, and 85% of that was bailed and going to landfills. So it was right at that point. And then when he restarted the program, the Department of Sanitation specified what plastics. And if you look at your instruction, it says if it's not round and does not hold the liquid, don't put it there. And therefore, the residue decreased.
Now, San Francisco is the first city in America to require food waste to be separated from other trash. Is that a good idea, Nicholas?
It is a very good idea, and it has been done, as Elizabeth said, in Toronto. One of the plants is very successful in composting. The other one, not so, for good reasons, which is too complicated to discuss now.
Now, it's composting because you don't want to mix meat products in with vegetable products, and you can compost with all of the vegetable stuff?
No, you can do all, but it has to be anaerobic digestion. But you mentioned San Francisco, and it's always mentioned as a good example. And the center of San Francisco, let's say San Francisco proper, what we see as tourists, they're doing an excellent job. But if you look at the San Francisco, metropolitan San Francisco, they landfill 400,000 tons for a which is about half a ton per person. So it's a bit less than the United States, which is 0.65 tons. But they still landfill a lot. So if you take one enclave, you can say this is a great job. But when you look at the big picture, it does not differ too much. A little bit better San Francisco does in recycling.
Well, I always feel kind of self-righteous that I compost, I home compost. It's cut my garbage. The garbage that I take out for the sanitation department by at least a third, maybe even a half. But I'm getting the sense now it's such a tiny contributor to the environment that I shouldn't feel self-righteous. I just should be pleased that I can compost.
Yeah, You're right doing it. I do that in Cape Cod. My main home is in Cape Cod, and we compost there. And it's very convenient because that means you don't have to go to the transfer station as often, because what makes the smells and the problems is the food waste. And no. If you put those, so you can get them out. You know, let me come back to the original thing we talked about the municipal solid waste being a relatively small fraction, but it's the most bothersome fraction because you have the mixed food waste and everything in there. Industrial waste usually can go to monofill, so they can be recycled. That's why you never hear problems with industrial waste or with construction and demolition.
Well, what happens to the compost in San Francisco? Is it sold to farmers?
Yes, it is, and it goes onto vineyards, and it's used to grow fruit and vegetables and wine that come back into the city. And Dr. Samuels, when you talked about the tonnages that are sent to landfill from the larger San Francisco area, are you saying that they're not collecting food waste from areas outside the city, and or that even with collecting food waste in that whole area, they're still...
What I was saying is, and you can go to, Elizabeth, you can go to the web and you can look at the San Francisco landfills and you'll see for yourself. It used to be a higher amount, 600,000, they dropped it. What it points out, no reason to make a judgment, simply points out that there is a lot of stuff ending up in landfills, which means that a lot of areas of San Francisco are not as diligent as the San Francisco downtown, let's say, where people do whatever they can do.
Well, is there anything positive to be said for landfills? Don't they create their own waste and greenhouse gases and, in many cases, poison the land that they're on for centuries?
Well, there are two kinds of landfills, and unfortunately the world, most of the world has the worst kind, which the modern landfills, sanitary landfills, they protect the waters. They provide a barrier underneath the landfill, and they try to collect as much gas, which is methane gas, which is number two contributor to the climate change after the carbon dioxide. So the sanitary landfills do a better job, but still they take up land. And the amount they take of land is quite high, nationally speaking. And if you take for 100 years, it's a lot. In 1,000 years, incredible. So it's not the way to go to do it. But
I have to point out that those liners do not last forever either. As you said, these landfills are going to be there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and the landfill liners, all the EPA has said, will eventually leak. And so all of this toxic material that we've put in there, all this crazy mix of stuff from our homes and businesses, is creating leachate, which is filled with toxic contaminants and can contaminate soil and water for a long time to come.
How is the gas collected?
They put pipes. They have pipes, and they have a system where the gas is sucked out, let's say, of the landfill. This is after the landfill cell has been closed. They cannot do much before it's closed. So it might be 3 or 4 years after the landfill has started. So
but it's disintegrating.
It is, yeah, there's a reaction, we call it anaerobic reaction. The same is in anaerobic digestion. You produce methane gas. And they try to collect this gas and make generate electricity. But it cannot be very effective, totally effective. My estimate is 50% of the landfill gas in the U.S. On an average is collected.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with more of this. Please explain, look at what we do with our garbage and what we can do. We have a mini-series going here on Please Explain called How to Save the World. I'm not sure we're going to save the world with any of these segments, but at least it gives us an idea of what directions we might go into. And my guests are Nicholas J. Themelis, Director of the Earth Engineering Center and Professor in the School of Engineering at Columbia University, and Elizabeth Royt returns to our show to talk. She's been here to talk about her book Garbage Land, which is published by Back Bay Books. Also, Bottle Mania, which is from Bloomsbury. And again, we invite your questions. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or call us at 212-433-9692. And we're back with Please Explain. We're trying to save the world through looking for ways that we can dispose of garbage. with Elizabeth Royte, R-O-Y-T-E. She is the author of Garbage Land from Back Bay Books and Bottlemania from Bloomsbury. And with Nicholas J. Themelis, T-H-E-M-E-L-I-S, the director of the Earth Engineering Center and a professor in the School of Engineering at Columbia University. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go to one of those calls. Inga from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. That is a very interesting conversation. And I'm very frustrated that New York City does not do more in recycling. I'm going every year in the summer for about 2 months to Germany. And there they have recycling bins all over the cities, at airports, at train stations. When I'm staying at a small place, I have about half, they pick up recycling and garbage only every 2 weeks, not twice a week. And my garbage is approximately half a kitchen bag in 2 weeks or less. They recycle all packaging, all wrapping, everything goes into recycling. There is very, very little sanitation. And it's mind-boggling how little emphasis is paid to recycling in the United States here.
Well, since we are not sure just how effective recycling is, Nicholas and Elizabeth, should we be doing more recycling? Would it be cost effective?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to see, to look at New York City, since we are in New York City right now. And they put out records as to what is the rate of percent recycling in different neighborhoods. And the last time I looked at it, I think it was last year data or 2010 data, some neighborhoods recycle 28%. In some neighborhoods, recycle 8%. But the city provides the same infrastructure across the city.
But this is a matter of education, isn't it?
And well, education.
Can't people be fined if they don't?
Yeah. So, yes, education or interest or whatever it takes.
And also infrastructure. There isn't, as the caller mentioned, there's more public, there's not enough public recycling containers in New York City, but the mayor, to his credit, has pledged to, I don't know, put 500 or 1,000 more. I think we need a lot more. But we have a lot of visitors who come to the city, or people who come to, you know, just to work or are passing through, and they don't see these blue recycling receptacles on the sidewalks, and so this stuff ends up in the regular trash. So
or on the sidewalk, as I often witness.
We need more public recycling infrastructure, more education, and definitely more enforcement, and more belief that the system is doing what it says.
Now, there are listeners who have... Go ahead.
This is important, you know, public recyclers, and he's going to increase to 1,000 containers. So you make a calculation, 1,000 containers, how many times it'd be emptied, how many tons. It would be, I predict, a small part of the residential, where people have the capacity. All they're asked is to put things in one blue bag, in a white bag, and in a garbage bag, and put it, and then the Department of Sanitation picks them up. So why is it not being done? So it's because people don't know, and I think that's where environmental organizations and so on should address themselves if they want to increase recycling. The education part, why do people not recycle it? When they know it's important, why some neighborhoods doing so much more?
Now, a listener points out, or a number of listeners pointed out, that there are possibilities for recycling. Best Buy has a drop-off recycling program for electronics at their Geek Squad desk at some locations. They have a video loop running explaining how it works, and this person says he dropped off a dead external drive at the 86 and Lexington location last week. He wonders what happens afterward. Jeremy in Manhattan says, I just discovered that the local mailbox, et cetera, type stores love it if you bring your bubble wrap and styrofoam things, boxes, et cetera, to them, because I guess they reuse them.
Yeah, there are all kinds of outlets all over the city, people or organizations that want your textiles, that want your food scraps, that want your electronics, your empty printer cartridges, your old cell phone. But you have to kind of fit the demo of people who care about this stuff and will go out of their way to find out. And and are kind of in tune with it, but I just, it is unfortunately a very small fraction of people who will take the trouble, who care enough and will take the trouble to find out and then haul their stuff, because it is going to be up to you to do all this sort of reverse distribution of your goods to outlets that will take them.
Well, what can really be recycled? Can plastics be broken down to recover the petrochemicals that they were made with?
They are. The plastics that the city collects, the narrow neck bottles, the ones and twos, are washed and sort of shredded into flake or remade into little pellets that are melted, or I think they use the word extruded, and they're made into textiles like fleece jackets and carpeting and things like that. The mixed plastics that are collected in other cities, a broader range of plastics are often, including plastic bags, are often made into plastic lumber, like Trex lumber.
Mm-hmm. Can they be converted into energy?
Nick?
Yeah, actually, of the plastics that are generated in the U.S., and that includes California, who does a good job about recycling, only 7% is recycled. In California, it's a bit higher, about 10%. And then another 10% about...
Do you mean in the U.S. are exported for recycling?
No. Total. That's what's reported. You can see yourself. Mm-hmm. The EPA reports 2.1 million tons total out of 30 million tons generated. And then there is another 10% which is combusted along with other municipal solid waste in waste-to-energy plants. So you really have something like about 16% total used either for materials or for energy recovery.
Now, what happens when we incinerate those things?
Well, then you get energy. At least you get energy. You get about 550 kilowatt hours per ton of municipal solid waste. So this it's a much better thing to do than landfilling.
But you got to build a special plant to do that.
You need a special plant, but in places like New York City, for instance, right now, they're spending $105 for landfilling. This is from the transfer station to transport to other states far away and then landfill them there. It's $105.
Per ton.
I'm sorry?
Per ton.
Per ton. $105 per ton. So it's about, could be like $300 million, let's say. So there are companies who would be willing to build a waste-to-energy plant, same like there are in Paris and in Vienna and all over the world, you know, in some place, either in the city or outside the city, and combust this material and do it for $70. I mean, we have investigated that. So the city could save $35.
But it doesn't do it.
Well, there's opposition because people from the past, and at some point, these incinerators, as they were called, they were the biggest sources of emissions.
Mm-hmm.
But that has changed now, and that's why we started talking with, not talking, but at least communicating with Mayor Bloomberg in 2001, and of course, nothing has happened in New York, except there's 500,000 tons from Manhattan that go to a plant in waste to energy in Essex County. But since 2001, there have been 225 new waste to energy plants in the world.
Now, Elizabeth, what happens to the waste from the incineration or the energy plant? Doesn't that have to be taken care of?
You mean the ash?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it is usually landfilled, or some people...
So we're back to the landfill.
Or it's used beneficially, I'll put that in quotes, because there's still some questions, but Dr. Themelis can talk about that. It's used in construction or in concrete, is that right?
Yeah, well, the bottom mass can be used, the fly, but that ash, you have to remember, has no organic material, so it's not a reacting mass. This is what is landfill, so it can go to so-called monofills. They're designed to take this ash, and this ash is about 10% of the volume of the, if it's not used outside.
Now, you suggested earlier that glass is not really recyclable.
Oh, no, it is.
Or is?
No,
I said that in 2001, 85% of the glass was going to landfills.
Uh-huh.
Because there was no market for it. And to this day, it's recyclable in the sense you can use it like a fill, you know, like you use road fill.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of using soil, you use glass. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But to make a product which has a value, it has to be sorted out to different types of glass.
Right. It comes in four different colors, and it breaks easily, and so it all gets mingled together. And we don't have a great market. California has a great glass recycling program because they have an aerospace industry and they have the wine industry and there's a lot of end users. New York City doesn't have someone who can take this much glass all the time and separate it by color and use it up all the time. And so we used to mix the glass with asphalt to make glass fault for paving, and the Department of Transportation doesn't use it that way. So that kind of sent the glass recycling system into a tailspin, and now we're back to it, but I believe it's just being crushed up and used as cover at landfills now.
We have a very little time, and we have a lot of callers. I hope each of our callers, like Chris from Connecticut, can make it as brief as possible. Hi, Chris.
Hey. I'll make it real quick. I'm the president of a startup company. We've got a process that converts waste, any carbon waste, to energy, and actually it's a wet process. We need about 50 to 70% water within our process. And I'm struggling right now to get funding to build our first plant. There seems to be all sorts of programs for wind farms or for solar, but for startups, there is very, very little out there in the marketplace.
You need a lobbyist, Chris.
Yeah, I do. But I do believe there are some things that make sense to recycle, but I do believe there's a lot of things that don't make sense to recycle, and turning them to energy, I think, is the best use for them.
Anybody want to respond,
Elizabeth? Yeah, respond. I want to add to this that there's an effort now to separate plastic film, things that cannot be recycled for materials, and to recycle them for energy recovery, to make a fuel or something, a synthetic oil. And there are some companies, one of them is Global Climax Energy, we're working with them, where they are proceeding to building the first prototype plant, and maybe some of the New York plastic residue, which right now is not used, has to be landfilled, could go. This is the best material to use as a feedstock in a pyrolysis plant. This is what they call pyrolysis. Breaking down plastic into its original hydrocarbons, let's say.
Now, we are a well-organized, wealthy nation, and yet we don't handle our trash all that well. We've been hearing about big trash-picking places in Cairo and Mumbai. Are third-world countries doing anything about recycling, or are they just dumping stuff and having poor people go through it to find things that they might be able to retrieve?
Well, that is recycling. There are people who will go through the trash and find value in anything they can there, textiles, food to feed animals with for meat, rubber, plastics, paper, metal. So they do a fantastic job. It's all handwork. People here won't do that. They're not paid very much, but this is how they make their living, going through landfills, recovering materials, and selling them to scrap dealers.
And getting sick in some cases, unfortunately.
Yes, it's dangerous work.
Now, there also is the garbage patch, garbage patches in all of the oceans, the most famous, the Pacific garbage patch. That's because we don't handle our garbage well. Plastic just winds up out in the oceans.
It's lightweight. It blows around. It's difficult to handle.
Yeah, actually, I have noticed this, Leonardo. We visited several islands in the Caribbean, in the Atlantic, and the cleanest we found by far is Bermuda. There's nothing to be flying around. While if you go to Jamaica or to U.S. Virgin Islands, whatever, they have a nice resort. And right next to the resort, you'll see fields full of plastics and this and that. And I thought the reason in Bermuda is because they have a very good integrated waste management system that includes a waste-to-energy plant.
And we thank you both so much for being with us on today's Please Explain Attempt to Save the World, looking at garbage and recycling. Nicholas J. Themelis, director of the Earth Engineering Center, professor of the School of Engineering at Columbia University. Elizabeth Wright, who's written about recycling.